difficult to be avoided, which is a good, this is a good section. How can it, on page 24, anybody need a book? I got some extra Lona copies. All right. Okay. And we left off with the fact that the basic definition of an illusion being that it says in paragraph 2, sentence 3, that by definition an illusion is an attempt to make something real that's regarded as of major importance but is recognized as being untrue. So an illusion is something, it's basically saying an illusion is something to me that I think is really important that I want to be true even though it's not true. So in any area of our life where there's something that isn't true but we want it to be true and we want it to be true so bad that we make it true in our minds, that's the Course in Miracles definition of illusion. And it's also basically the Course in Miracles definition of this physical experience that we have. This is also something that we want to be true to the point that we make it true. You know, I want to make it true that I'm separate. I want to make it true that I'm in the body. I want to make it true that I'm different. I want to make it true that things begin and things end. I don't have an eternal nature. It basically, everything that you perceive is what you want to be true. Because at the point you perceive it is the point that you've accepted it as true, because it's only when you've accepted it as true that you perceive it and experience it. So your physical experience isn't a reflection of what's true. Your physical experience is a reflection of what you've accepted as true. So that's why you can't use your physical experience to prove or disprove the truth of anything, because it just witnesses to what you already believe. So that's just like saying, I'm going to prove that I have on a red shirt by looking in the mirror. You know, well, I got the red shirt on. So of course when I look in the mirror is not going to reflect back a blue shirt. So every time we hear a truth, and then we go, well, that doesn't seem like that's true. Well, you're just reflecting back what you believe, and so you're just seeing what you believe, and so you just, all we're doing is just basing whether or not something is true on our personal physical experience, which is based on what we believe is true. So the most challenging part of getting into the truth is that part where you have to tell yourself something that seems completely different from what you believe is true. And that's the part where most people fade out. Because they'll go, well, that couldn't possibly be true because my physical experience doesn't validate that. And then they'll say, well, look at what's happening in the world. Well, the world is also a reflection of my belief system. And society is a reflection of a group of people believing the same belief system. So you can't, so again, the Course is telling us that, you know, what we see is a result of what we've accepted as true, and then we attract those who have the same fundamental beliefs that we do, and then that convinces us that it must be true because we have so many people around us that seem to be true. But I'm sure when everyone thought the world was flat, the person that thought it was round was looked at as being completely insane. But just because the majority believed that it was flat, did that make it true? No. So you could be completely correct in your perception, your new perception, and not have any kind of validation from the people around you that you're right. And since most of us look for validation, that's why people, again, drop the new direction. And that's one of the reasons why I'm doing advanced mind training, because I know that a group of people joining together, focusing on a common idea, willing to look at their beliefs honestly, will speed along in their spiritual awakening. A group of people that's arguing about the direction they want to go in and debating about it, that just delays the whole thing. So every time we come together as a group to do in-depth study, we don't realize how much we speed ourselves along much faster than we would trying to do it individually on our own. But it's going to be challenging simply because we're going to be hearing a lot of stuff that's different from what we believe, especially in the areas that we're going through pain in. Because the area that we're going through pain in, is, of course, says that's the area where we're deceiving ourselves the most. But because we can feel it, we have a tendency to believe more of what we feel than anything else. So the fact that I feel it makes it seem like it's even truer to me. Everybody with me on that?
So you said people drop out at that point.
A lot of times people drop out.
But if you hold steadfast in that belief, mm-hmm. that vision, mm-hmm. there's like a transformation, if you will, of people and events. And
absolutely.
So
but
these will start to fade out.
And the new ones will start to come in who share your belief. Right. And the in-between stage is when most people fade out. That stage where the new people haven't completely arrived and the old situation hasn't completely gone yet. I'm totally disoriented. I'm confused now. Now I'm frightened. So I'm going to go back to what I already know. I might be miserable, but at least I got a lot of people I can party with. We all crazy as hell, but boy, we can dance. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going back, you know. But we don't realize, well, there's some part of people on the same side also. The difference is you have even more fun because there's no fear. You know, it's not you don't lose anything, you gain something. But that in between stage, and that's why the concept of the Holy Spirit is so important, because it's the part of us that the Course says is aware of our past learning and also aware of the truths of God. And that part of us guides us into the next level. But we're used to guiding ourselves. And so then we have to establish a relationship with the part of ourselves that's sane, which the Course calls the Holy Spirit, which is what the book is about. It's about removing the blocks to being able to listen to your sane mind, as opposed to listening to the insane man. One of the diagrams that I used Sunday was real helpful for me anyway, and because I think it really explains the ego really well to kind of help us understand what we're doing. You know, like Cora said, this is the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit is nothing but another term for our sane man, the part of us that's still aware of universal truth, the personal voice that's in touch with God. Okay, and then we have our ego, which the Course describes as our past learning, right? That our past learning that we identify with as being ourselves. So either we listen to our past learning or we listen to our, and I like to say our new learning. And that's the challenge. The challenge is, am I going to go to this mind now, my right mind, or am I going to go to my past learning? And whichever one I go to, the Course says, in order to create anything, there must be a union. So if I connect with my loving mind, then that creates the circumstances, or I like to look at it this way, the new perception that we are trying to get. Okay, notice that if we join with our right mind, we get the new perception or the new physical experience. If we join with our past learning, then we get what? The OP, which is what? The old perception. Okay, notice that they're completely opposite, and that's why I like to do it that way. So a person is into their past learning, they literally don't see the world that the person is in their new learning seeing. As a matter of fact, the new perception doesn't even exist to the person that's in the old perception. So when they come to a class and I'm talking about the new perception, they're looking at the old perception going, this is insane. If a person is applying the new perception, then they're starting to see the new perception, and they're seeing an entirely different experience. But the two are completely irreconcilable. So what most people do, they come to the new perception, like the Course in Miracles, and then they try to fit it into their past learning. And if it doesn't fit into their past learning, then they get upset, they feel resistance, they get angry sometimes, because they're trying to, it's like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. It won't work. The Course is saying, you know, this is an entirely different thought. It doesn't have anything in common with this one. So do not try to fit the Course in Miracles into the teachings you got as a child, what you learned in other teachings, because that just slows you down. And so that's why we are getting it. So the Course is saying, this is a past learning that I want to be true that's not really true. Which is that the Course would say there's fear, you know, or separation, right? And then the Course is saying, no, the reality is that there's love and union. All right? So the mind that's in fear projects fear, sees fear, experiences fear, attracts people that are fear, situations, circumstances that are fearful, and that's what they perceive in their reality. The person is going for the loving one, they create that. The Course says now, answers the question, well, so why is it that it looks like the so-called bad stuff manifests quicker than the good stuff? Anybody know?
Anybody got an idea? Emotionally, charged with the negative.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If you say to me, there are people in the world that might rob you, then my mind would go, sure is. So I immediately joined with that. I accept that it's true. It manifests really fast. But if I say to you, each and every one of you are immortal, eternal, totally innocent. You've never done anything to hurt anybody. It's just been a situation where you've been learning that you're not a body, that you can't be hurt, and that God is real. See the difference? I don't immediately accept that as true. So therefore, I don't see that manifest in my experience as fast. So the Course said we immediately accept what the ego says is true, and then we constantly question what love says to us. And that's what slows it down. See, it's really simple. We complicate it, but it's really pretty simple. Okay, so this next paragraph says...
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
Because it seems like there's some subconscious stuff going on here, too. That
but it's all, most of all subconscious.
Right.
Yeah.
So what you're seeing coming to you faster,
uh-huh.
even if it's good, because sometimes it could just be good,
mm-hmm.
even if you think you're in fear,
mm-hmm.
that tells you where you are subconsciously.
Right.
Or at least that's how I do it.
Right. Well, your physical reality is your subconscious mind.
Right.
So your physical reality is, that is a reflection of what the Course would call your secret thoughts. That's why you can't go back. Because the average person says, this is what I believe, okay? And that's like the tip of an iceberg. This is me. No, that's you. And that's beneath the surface. It was the iceberg under the ocean that did the Titanic in. It wasn't so much the part they could see. And so most people just identify with this part. And they say, well, this is me. And the Course is saying, no. No, all this is you. And you're in denial about the bottom part of your iceberg. And so now you're going to experience the bottom part of your iceberg as your physical experience and your physical perception. So rather than fight the outer as being something else outside of me that has nothing to do with me in terms of the way that I'm seeing it, a conscious being will enfold that as being a part of their own mind. And then that's how you allow it to pass through you and not touch you. Not projecting it out as something that's antagonistic to me, but understanding that it's a reflection. And the key word is something in my mind. What you see is not a reflection of you. And that's another error that the Course teaches that we make. We'll say, well, I'm just seeing myself. No, you're not seeing yourself. You're seeing your ideas. Yourself can't be seen physically. Yourself is too big to be limited to a physical perception. Okay? That's deep. But when you look at me, you're not seeing me. You are seeing your beliefs about me and your learnings about me. I don't see any of you.
So you're going to evaporate?
Well, I never was here. That's why, you ever notice when something dies, it fades away?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally. Well, that's because it never was here. If it was real, it would never fade away. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's deep, and we don't have to get into that. But that's a whole other show. Let's not deal with that right now. But I just thought I'd throw that out there. If it was real, where did it go?
It went back to what it was.
Yeah, it went back to what it was, which was whatever made it appear to be was the ultimate reality. Whatever created what appeared to be. You know, it's like a sculptor, you know, they take the clay or whatever and then they form it into something. It's the clay that's real. The form they made the clay into is the illusion because they can change it into something else. So we're trying to get back to the clay, you know, and we're trying to allow a different sculpture to be formed. We're doing fear sculptures right now. The Course is saying, wouldn't you like to take that same consciousness and create a love sculpture? But then we're so arrogant that we're not willing to accept instruction even though we're bad sculptors. Right? Let's face it, you know, that's what the average person is doing. They're like, okay, let me get in charge of the clay and let me mold it even though I don't have the slightest idea about even what to mold or how to mold. And all my moldings in the past have presented me with pain, but I just need a new mold. So most people don't change unless they're under excruciating pain. They have to be really in a painful situation to make a change. The hardest people to teach in all the years I've taught are people who are sort of happy. They're the ones that's the biggest drag to teach. Because people who are sort of happy don't do nothing. The job isn't so bad that they can't stand it. But, you know, it doesn't exactly thrill them either. You know, the relationship isn't horrible enough for them to really make a change, but it's not so great either. So they just kind of stay there. You know what I mean? It's the in-between people that tend not to make changes. But somebody who comes to me for counseling or comes to a class and life has just got a size 20 shoe up their butt, they're on the edge of their seat. Just tell me what to do. You know, or people who are statically happy and want to maintain that happiness, they go, "Ooh, this is going good. I really want to make sure." But the people that's the average person doesn't do anything but complain. That's all the average person does.
Mm-hmm. So you said accept instructions. Does that come through us, or it comes through mirrors from us?
It comes both ways. It comes through us, and it also comes in the form of the Holy Spirit or the higher self speaking through what appears to be our external environment, which we'll call synchronicities, or somebody happening to say something and they think they're talking about something else, but they're talking about exactly what you need to be listening to. You know, yeah, it comes both ways. But what the Course does is the Course teaches us how to tell the difference between when we're listening to the voice we made up and the voice of Spirit. It says that's its only purpose. It's not about manifesting. It's about let me teach you how to recognize when you're getting ready to jam yourself up before you do it. Let me teach you how to recognize when you're, because pleasure at the ego level is just as much a fear as pain is. Pleasure is no different from pain when it's coming from the idea of separation. Because pleasure that doesn't last is a fear. There's fear, will it last? Will it come again? How can I keep it? How can I hold on to it? So pleasure at an ego level is just as frightening. You know, people are afraid because they don't have money. People are afraid because they think they're going to lose it and they're spending all their time trying to figure out how not to lose it. They still have fear. You see what I'm saying? You have a great date with somebody, you're afraid they might not call you. You know, it's fear. So the Course says what we do is we take fear, and then he says, I love it that Jesus said, then we take some forms of fear and then we call it pleasant. And then we have some forms of fear that we call unpleasant. And then they're saying, well, how would you like to go to a real pleasure, which is a pleasure that never ends, that only increases? And I'm like going, okay, yeah, I'm up, I'm down. I said, okay, well, you got to be willing to listen to how to recognize a fear so that you won't call a fear to you, and thinking that it's a pleasure, thinking that it's love. So the next paragraph three goes, where do all the differences come from? He says, certainly the differences seem to be in that world outside. Yet it's surely the mind that judges what the eyes behold. That's a great sentence. It's the mind that judges what the eyes behold. So here's your mind. Here's your mind. This is what it's seeing. And then you judge it. Everybody agree with that? I see something, then I judge it. Okay, he says, yet it's surely the mind that judges what the eyes behold, which means it's the mind that interprets the eyes' messages and gives them meaning. So my mind interprets what I see, and then it gives what I see a meaning. Everybody with me on that? Okay, he says, and this meaning, check this out, doesn't exist in the world. Outside at all. The meaning that I give to you does not come from the outside world. The meaning that I give to you comes from my mind. Right? So that's why it says everything you see is in your mind. Because you're the one that's giving the meaning to everything you see. And you're giving it from the meanings you have in your mind. Now, who knows where those meanings in your mind come from? Where did they come from? There you go. All the meanings in your mind come from your past experience and learning. So, if that past learning was wrong, what does that say about all the meanings you give to everything?
Misperception.
There's a misperception. You know, I like to use the, and I also like to use the word wrong. You know why? Because I don't like to be wrong.
Who does?
Right, nobody does. That's why the Course uses terms that New Age people hate, like wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, New Age people hate that. Hate for you to say wrong. I remember that when I first got into metaphysics, I had some word, you know, every direction is the right direction. There's no decision that's the wrong decision. And everything you do is the right. Anybody familiar with that? You know, and the Course said, you know something? You don't have time enough to try all directions. You'll die first as a physical being. You can't believe in that all directions work is not beneficial. For me to believe that every direction works for me to come to Unity Temple wouldn't give me the shortest route to Unity Temple. Going by way of Russia would not have been the way to get here. So in terms of what you want to experience, you have to look at things as, you don't have to, but it's helpful to look at things in terms of this is a helpful direction for me to go in, this is not a helpful direction for me to go in. This is a right-minded attitude, this is a wrong, because what that does is it plugs into the programming you already have. And your mind will automatically resist going in that direction. But if you tell yourself, all directions are good, you see what I'm saying? Oh, this is just a lesson. You call it a lesson after you've made the mistake. Mm-hmm. That's the way you do it. After you've gone the wrong way, then you go, this is a lesson. Okay? But don't do it first. At first go, is this the right way for me to go or the wrong way for me to go? Because it's automatically a lesson when you go the wrong way. You don't have to worry about that. That's the lesson is built into that. So it's good to look at it as a lesson. But when you go to that thing where, you know, it's a lesson, well, yeah, it's a lesson, but you didn't have to go through it. You went through it because that's why I love those. To me, the way the Holy Spirit works is just like my GPS, my little portable GPS device. It's exactly where you want to go. And I type it in, and then this voice literally says, take a left at 500 yards, and then when I'm really having a good relationship with it, it said, Earl, you really cute. You know, I love I know, I got a hold of GPS. My GPS is like, you know, it's really cool, you know. And so the point that, and you know what happens? So I make a wrong turn, right? And immediately my GPS says, recalculating direction. I mean, as soon as I go the wrong way, it says, now I'm going the wrong way, right? But it immediately recalculates from where I am the best way for me to go, which I think is really, really cool. I think that's a perfect analogy of the Holy Spirit. I make up my mind that I don't want to go the way the voice is telling me to go. I go the wrong way, right? And then it says, you need to turn back in 50 yards and go to, no, I want to go, then I go, you need to turn back. Hey! Turn back, you know. But, you know, that's the way Spirit is doing it. We make up our mind to do it differently, and then we continue to get guidance, but that still didn't mean I didn't go out of the way. You know, so, in the Course, it says, how can you tell when you're going out of the way? You're in pain. You're in fear. You're in lack. You're lonely. You're depressed. You're weary. You're not excited. You don't feel happy. You need to go in another direction, right? And then, I don't know what direction to go. Well, listen to the GPS. Listen to the pod that does know. It'll tell you, this is the way you go. So that's what's happening right now. The Course in Miracles is like our own spiritual guidance system. Guess what the Holy Spirit is? Because I don't know. I just know where I want to go, which is my responsibility. It's to know where I want to go. And that's our responsibility, to get clear about what is my purpose, what do I want? Most people say, what do I want? I don't know. You ask them, what do you want? They say, I don't know. They'll tell you what they don't want. They'll tell you, I don't want this and I don't want that. But that's not the same as saying, could you imagine me going to my GPS system and saying, putting in there, this is the address I don't want to go to? You can see how confusing that would be to it. This is where I don't want to go. It must know. So your GPS is saying the same thing. Where do you want to go? I don't want to hear about what you don't want anymore, that you don't want to be broke, that you don't want to be lonely, you don't want to be sad. What do you want? Then the Course says, okay, if you don't know, I'll tell you. You want complete fulfillment. You want peace. That's what you want. That's what you want. But suppose I decide that Boulder is located in Hollywood, and I want to go to Boulder. Well, I'm going to have a problem, right? Yeah. Instantly. So when you decide where your peace is located, that's like me deciding that Boulder, Colorado is in Hollywood. I've made up my own mind about where Boulder is located, and we made up our own mind about where peace is located. And then we make it up. And then we spend the rest of our lives pursuing what we made up. That's why the GPS is saying you need to recalculate and go in the other direction because you're hurting. You know. So this is what the Course is saying to us. He says this meaning doesn't exist in the outside world at all. And what is seen as reality is simply what the mind prefers. So what you see as real is just what your mind prefers. Its hierarchy of values is projected outward, and in a sense, the body's eyes to find it. That's what I just said. I come up with what I want, and then I look out here to find it. Then it says, now, the body's eyes will never see except through differences. So the way that physical eyes work is that they look for differences. It's like the way I recognize the pen is that it's different from the glasses, which is different from the book, which is different from the water, which is different from the eraser, which is different from the recorder. So physical eyes see what? Differences. So the oneness that we're talking about will not be perceived through your physical eyes. And people look for oneness in their through their physical eyes. You don't see oneness through your physical eyes. You see, obviously, differences. Anybody doubt that? You say, no, I see oneness. No, you don't. You don't see oneness. You know oneness. You focus on oneness. You believe that there's oneness, but you see differences. So knowledge is not perception, which is a big point of the Course. He keeps saying knowledge and perception are not the same thing. You know what I mean? He could be my cousin. We could know that, but you wouldn't see that. But we would know that, and I'd treat him like my cousin. See what I'm saying? Knowledge is beyond perception. So a conscious being is living by what they know, not by what they see. An unconscious...
Seeing comes from the mind.
Because the seeing is coming from my knowledge. It's coming from my mind. So if I'm a conscious being, I'm living from... That's why the Course says, you know, you have to make a decision. Is God love? Is God fear? You know, are you a powerful being? Are you a weak being? Are you a victim? Or do you create? Because that has to be from the realm of knowledge. Because it's not going to look like it from perception. From perception, yes, it looks like things happen to me that I have no control over. Right. You know, and from perception, it looks like we're not cousins. You know, so you can't, so knowledge is another realm. So the Course is saying, your bodies are only going to see differences. And he says, yet it is the mind that what? Evaluates their messages. I'll go back. The body's eyes will never see except through differences. Yet it is not the messages that the body's eyes bring on which perceptions rest. Only the mind evaluates the messages of the eyes. So that means what? Only the mind is responsible for seeing. Only the mind is responsible for seeing. You know that that's true because you see things in your sleep with your eyes closed. So we already know you can see without physical eyes. But we take it for granted so much we don't even think about it. You don't need physical eyes to see. And when you begin to get in touch with your higher self, you will be able to see anywhere because you'll be seeing with your mind and not with your eyes. Anybody read the book Jonathan Livingston Seagull?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Remember when he had the old Master Girl was teaching him, and at one point he was standing on in this world or wherever they were, and then in the next instant they were in some other strange world with three or four suns or something. And he was like going, you know, how in the world did we get here? You know, and the old Master Girl looked at him and said, because we're already here. It's easy to be somewhere you already are. So Jonathan is thinking of himself as a single, separate entity. The Master Girl was seeing it all as being part of his mind. So therefore, he could go to any part of his own mind anytime. Just like you can go instantaneously from thinking about your head to thinking about your foot. That doesn't take any time because that's already within your consciousness. That's why in a second you can go back to thinking when you were a child and you can try to think about what happened yesterday. That's instantaneously because all that's already in your mind. That's different. And so it's those kind of concepts that I'm going to go into deeper, again, on Saturday, because I have more time to really work with that and then show you how you can tune into those other realities that you're trying to work so hard to go. What happened with me in my personal experience is that I got into this stuff very early, at a very early age, and I got into what people are calling the big secret 30 years ago. And I saw that you could manifest through focusing on thoughts. But what I also learned was that that don't mean anything if you don't have peace of mind and you don't have love. So I changed my whole focus to peace and love. You know, and so when I did that, it wasn't about material things, even though I love to have nice things. So I'm not anti-having nice things. I just know that they don't have anything to do with my peace. Because in these 30 years of teaching and sharing, I've had periods of time where I've had lots and lots of money, and I've had periods of time that I haven't. I've had periods of times where I was driving Mercedes and Lexuses, and I had times where I'm driving a car that's a lot older than that. You know, you know what I'm saying? I've had an experience of being on this path and watching a lot of different manifestations happen. And what I learned through that was the only thing that matters is love, and the only thing that matters is peace, and the only thing that matters is the relationships you have and the connections that you have from the heart. So that's what I'm personally working on. And that's why I'm not so much about trying to have stuff or things right now. Not because of the condemnation of it. It's just that I know to manifest those things without having your consciousness and mind together is more of a detriment than it's a benefit. Okay? Yeah. So that's why I'm into the core so heavy, rather than manifesting. Manifesting is not a big deal. Anybody can do it, the ones they're willing to. Focus on what they want, mix it with feeling and emotion, do something physical in the world that's symbolic of your a willingness to have it, it's gonna manifest. You can count on it. It's gonna happen. Most people just are asking for stuff that they don't. Most people are asking for stuff that they don't believe they deserve. And because they don't believe they deserve it, they don't manifest it. And they think the laws of manifestation doesn't work. And they don't realize it's just a reflection of their lack of self-esteem and love for themselves.
In fact, the law has been working.
Yeah. Yeah, the law is always working. It's always my favorite one is the universe always says yes. Things don't go right for me. Yes, I can never have a relationship that works. Yes, my job will never make me happy. Yes, my job will make me happy. Yes, I can have beautiful relationships. Yes, it says yes to whatever you are saying right now. It'll go yes. You'll see it just like you're putting it out there. So. It says only the mind evaluates the messages of what? The messages that your eyes are showing you. And so the main line is what? Only the mind is responsible for seeing. Only the mind is responsible for seeing. Only your mind is responsible for what you see. Only your mind is responsible for what you see. Then you can say, well, what does that mean? When you're reading the course, you can say, what does that mean? And then read the next sentence, because he anticipates that you're going to ask, what does that mean? So when you say, what does that mean? It says, well, the mind alone decides whether what is seen is real or illusory, desirable or undesirable, pleasurable or painful. Your mind is responsible for seeing, because it's your mind that decides what's real for you and what's not. Whew. See how the course... Say that in a way, you know, the mind will tell us the course is difficult, but have you noticed that as I go through this, it's not? It's just that most people don't read it. They just make a decision that it can't be read because they see the Christian terminology. It comes in, it blocks their perception because their past learning made them hate Christian terminology. So they're doing exactly what I said. They're letting their past learning determine whether or not they go into the new perception. So they spend all their time battling with the words instead of focusing on their meaning. I don't like the word God. I didn't like the word God either when I was going by that old stuff. I didn't like the word Jesus either. I didn't like the word Christ either. Thank God I went beyond that. So what is it saying? What's the meaning? Forget the word. What's the meaning? Because that's the real content. That's the thing that's important. What's the meaning? I think most of the people that come to the course are recovering religious people. I do. I think it needs to be like Religious Anonymous or something. I do. I think most of the people that come to the course have real issues with their religious backgrounds, and but they're drawn to it because there is a part of them that hungers for their connection with God, even though they're fighting it every inch of the way. That's where they still come, though, because some part of us goes, you know, maybe I threw the baby out with the bathwater here. You know, maybe just because I learned something crazy about God, that doesn't mean that there might not be a creator, because I sure don't remember creating myself. The Big Bang Theory. Any questions about that paragraph before we go to the next one?
Earl, can I just... You were talking about... I love the analogy with the GPS. When I first started using a GPS, it would give me directions, and I would say, but that's not where I think I need to go. And I actually made the same analogy with the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Funny. But you would mention that when we're in pain, fear, weary, lack, unhappy, it tells me I'm going in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
So then, how do I get back on the right direction? Is that where I need to go? Yeah, I need to see another way to look at this.
Right, when I
like we did on that Saturday.
That's right.
I've been using that a lot.
That's right.
That.
That's
so
right. That's what you do. Because when you say, okay, at least I can decide that I don't like the way I feel now. I'm going the wrong way. I don't like the way I feel now. At least I can decide. See, I got to decide something. I go crazy because I got to be. I'm a control freak, so I got to decide something. Okay. So the course humors us and says, "Well, say I can decide that I don't like the way I feel right now." Then he says, "But we won't do the second part, which is what." And so I hope
I have been wrong.
I have been wrong. See, if I'm going the wrong way from the way the GPS is trying to point to me, and I go, "Oh shoot, I'm going the wrong way." But if I want to be right, I'm going to keep going in that direction, even though the GPS is saying, turn back, turn back, turn back. So in order for me to listen to it, I got to first go, I hope I have been wrong. Because that opens me up to listen. And so then I go, I want another way to look at this. Perhaps there is another way to look at this. What can I lose by asking? Well, that's the same as going, okay, I'm going to do what the GPS says. Because at the point that I don't want to be right is the point I'm willing to listen to my guidance. That's why people who think they know it all are almost impossible to counsel and impossible to guide. One of the things I share with people often if they come talk to me is, please stop telling me you know. You know, I know I'm creating this, and I know I really did this, and I know I'm the one that's creating. No, you don't know that. If you knew that, you would not be in the pain. So for you to continue to say, oh, I know I'm doing this, no, you can recite information you've heard. That's different. You're just reciting something you've heard. You don't know it. If you knew it, you use it. Every time each one of you go to your car today, I bet you anything, none of you would try to start your car by putting the key in the trunk in the back of the car. And I bet you every time you go to your car, you're going to put the key to the ignition or push the button as they're doing it now. You see what I'm saying? So once you know something, you're consistent and you do it all the time and it never varies. But if you say you know something and 1 minute you feel it this way and 1 minute you feel that way and 1 minute you're trying to do it this way and another minute you're trying to do it that way, you need to say, I don't know. You know, if you don't have a cut and dry rules or principles that you live by consistently and you experiment and you try new things and you read new things, then you need to admit to yourself, you don't know. I don't go to my car and try to start the car with the handle one day, grab the windshield washer, the net wiper the next day, caress the headlight to start it up the next day. I consistently go to the ignition. And so until you're consistent, you need to say, and I need to say, I don't know. I'm experimenting. I don't have the slightest idea how to have relationships. Because all the time I'm trying to do it different ways. I don't know how to be prosperous. Why? Because I got 900 different books on prosperity that are all saying different things and I'm trying to do all of them. I don't know how to do happiness. Why? Because I got 1,000 plans this year for my happiness. And I'm trying to see which one of them works. So I really don't know where my happiness is located. I'm just experimenting. I don't know yet. Because if I look at it as an experiment and it failed, then I go, oh, okay, I learned something from that. It doesn't work that way. Then I wouldn't be guilty. I wouldn't feel guilty about it. But when I think I know and it fails, then I have a tendency to beat myself up. Because I thought I knew. So I feel dumb. But if I knew it was an experiment to begin with, like you get ready to start a new relationship, and you say, would you like to have a relationship experiment with me? You know, then you can be more forgiving with each other. Right?
That's hilarious.
But do you see how it would work? Okay. You know, if you were to tell somebody, I don't know what love is, I really want to know what love is, I don't know how to do relationships perfectly, but I want to, then if you made a mistake, they'd be much more forgiving of you than the way we do it. Which is to walk up to people and go, I love you, I'll always love you, it'll never, you can count on my love forever. And then the minute you don't do that, then they're mad and they're upset and they feel betrayed. But it's because you lied to them to begin with. You make false promises to begin with. As a matter of fact, you insist that they make false promises for you to get into a relationship with them. That they got to promise you they're going to always be loving. And you know that's a bunch of crap. You know everybody goes through different moods and attitudes, and you know people make mistakes and they don't always do things consistently. But we walk into relationships with this fairy tale attitude of everybody's going to treat me better than I treat everybody. Right? I'm not consistent, but you better be. I sometimes make mistakes, but you better not make one. You know, you're in a relationship and the person's been loving with you for years and years and years and years and years. They make an error. They do what you would call an error. Whether that's they met somebody and went to bed with them, or they did whatever. All of a sudden, 30 years of consistency through your diarrhea and everything else you've had, that they've been right there for you. All of a sudden, because of this one thing that they have done that didn't fit in with your ideal, I'm through with you. I hate you forever and I never want to see you again. Why? Because you expect them to be perfect, that they could never make an error. And who's to say that's an error? That's just your perception and their perception. That's just the rules you all have made up for the relationship anyway. That has anything to do with reality. If we're all one, who's cheating on who? You know what I'm saying? If I go out with this hand, am I cheating on this one? Yeah, in the illusion of separation. Oh, I won't even go there yet either. Yeah. Well, that'd be that long. Everybody run. I'll never see anybody in this class again. You want to clear out a course class? Talk about love is freedom. Okay, you'll run away a class so fast it'll make your head spin. Yes. Does somebody, okay.
I hope I have it wrong.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay.
No, I don't like that, of course. Really. But I've been playing with it going, do I need to know what I hope I've been wrong about, or is it just, can I just go, I hope I've been wrong, or do I want to actually go, I hope I've been wrong about my perception of you, I hope I've been wrong about...
As long as you preface it with, I hope I've been wrong,
yeah.
Then it doesn't matter what you finish it out with. You can go, I hope I have been wrong, period. Because I don't like the way I feel.
Yeah.
Or I hope I've been wrong. Like if I'm hurting with someone, I'll say sometimes, you know, I hope I'm wrong about this. Or I hope I'm wrong about what I'm feeling. I hope I'm wrong about this. You know, but this is, because that way what happens is that you don't go into denial and repression. But I'm going to talk about that a lot in this next workshop about relationships. If I was at a party and I saw you talking to another guy and it looked like you were really, really digging on him and you was really into him, and I'm beginning to feel afraid because guess what? I grew up in the world. I got some fear. I think there's love. There's not enough love. I don't have high self-esteem, so I need you to stroke me. I call special relationships the personally famous relationships. Because it's like you're going to give me the fame and recognition that the whole world hasn't. So I get one person to make me their idol. And then I get a chance to be the special person. You see what I'm saying? And vice versa. So our deal is you're going to make me special and I'm going to make you special. So I call it personally. So now I'm personally famous for you. I come before anything because I have my whole within myself, and so therefore I need you to give me the value. So if you give that attention to somebody else, then you're taking the fame away from me. So then I become like a fading movie star. And now, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Now, you know, I'm now victim of 280, and now you're into Brad Pitt. You know what I'm saying? So I used to be the star, but now I haven't made a move in 30 years for you. You know, so the thing to keep in mind is that the once you're whole within yourself, you don't need external validation in order for you to feel good about yourself. And as soon as you feel whole within yourself, jealousy and fear and insecurity just drop away. You don't have to make them drop away, they just drop away. The once you know that you are loving and lovable, and you can always attract people to you who will love you and appreciate you because you appreciate yourself, then you won't be so hung up on what any one person is doing or not doing. Right?
Right.
But the average person doesn't want to invest the time and energy and personal growth that's necessary to get to that point. So they're just looking for somebody else to give them that sense of value that they're not giving themselves, and that's where. But the cool part about it is that you only really attract another person that feels the same way too. So y'all could be quite compatible if you both realized you were both dysfunctional, and you both had holes that needed to be filled. But most people don't do that. The ego will inevitably direct you to the person who seems to be opposite to you, and then you will be the one that's insecure, and then it looks like they are the ones that got their act together because the ego believes that opposites attract. So the introverted being is attracted to the extrovert, the person that likes to party. You've seen it a million times. Check out the average relationships with your friends and relatives, and notice how much their partners used to have a totally opposite temperament from them. And another thing that's interesting about special relationships is that the thing that attracted you to the person is the first thing that you try to get rid of the once you have them. You know, if you were attracted to them because they were the life of the party and on top of the table dancing and playing with everybody, that's what attracted you. But once they're yours, then you don't want them you don't want them on top of no table. You be on top of that table, I'm going to hit you with the table. You know what I'm saying? It's that kind of thing. You know. So fearful people believe that limitation is love. So their idea of love is the more I limit you, the more I love to show you my love. It's wow. And so when your mind begins to change and you see that love isn't like that, you look like the strange one. People think you're the strange one, you know. And so anyway, I haven't had those kind of relationships. Even if I'm attracted to one, I tell myself what it is. I say, this is your attraction to fear and guilt, Earl. You know, and even if I do it, I say, this is your attraction to fear and guilt. I own it. Even if the attraction is so strong, I still will give in to it. I don't call it love. I call it fear. Attractive fear. Juicy fear.
So you said love is freedom?
Love is freedom. Love is freedom. Love is not limitation. Love is freedom. If you love somebody, all you want for them is their happiness. Their right to be who they are and to express who they are, but while you nurture that. In other words, it's not about behavior, it's about I want you to be who you are. And then if it's not what I can handle, I'm going to have enough sense of responsibility to take care of myself.
There you go.
You see, to say, you know what, I love you and I want you to be free, but where I'm at right now, I can't handle that without feeling fear and separation. So since I really want to have a peaceful relationship with you, we need to change the form of our relationship. Maybe we don't need to be married. Maybe we just need to be friends. You see, I'm taking care of myself, and I'm not attacking them and trying to make them wrong because they want to be a way that I don't want them to be. And the average person, again, I keep saying the average person, that's what we're talking about. The average person is about, I'm going to guilt trip you into changing into what will not make me afraid. That's the average person. Rather than go, you know what, you're innocent, but I'm not where I can handle this now. So I can't enter into this form of a relationship. But I still want to have a relationship with you. So we'll change the form of the relationship to maintain the relationship. The Course says we do it just the opposite. We try to keep the form at the expense of the relationship. And that's why when the average person breaks up with another person, they're no longer friends and they can no longer communicate, because it was about the form of the relationship and not about the content of the relationship. So that's why the people that people have been physically intimate with are usually the people who are not around.
What if they are?
What if
the opposite is true?
Which is?
That they are around.
Then you made the relationship more important than the form of the relationship, and that's what a holy relationship is. A holy relationship is where the relationship between us is what's important, mm-hmm. more so than the way we do the relationship.
Okay.
You see what I mean? Okay. Like, just because you and I have decided we can't be girlfriend and boyfriend, why does that mean we can't be friends? Why does that mean we can't still want to be? Why does that mean I see you in King Supers, you have to go the other direction? You see what I'm saying? That's the ego. That's the way the ego does relationships. And when you start to wake up, you realize that you're sacrificing love all the time. You're just sacrificing one relationship after another relationship after another relationship, and that's why. Usually when I ask people about their test, about how many people that you've been physically intimate with in the past that you still have personal relationships with. And the vast majority will say most of them, they don't. Think about this. The person you were most intimate with, that's the person you are not around anymore. Then you switch it and you go, now the friends you have in your life and the people that you have in your life that's been there the longest, are they the people that you've been physically intimate with? And most of them will say, there's always some exceptions, but most of them will say, no, we haven't gone into the special love relationship. And so sometimes when if you're feeling that, I'm sure you've done this, you'll be feeling a special feeling for someone, and you'll ask yourself, this is somebody you've been friends with. You'll go, do I want to take it to that next level? Because I'm afraid I might lose the friendship. Have you ever said that before?
Yeah.
Where you felt that temptation to become more intimate, and then you go, I don't know if we do this, you know. Because you already know what's happened in the past. You know you lost that relationship. And so the ultimate relationship would be one that you could change the form of how you relate to each other as needed. Which wouldn't mean you have to sacrifice physical intimacy. It just means you be conscious enough to make the relationship the most important thing, which means at the point any form started to produce fear and conflict, instead of getting rid of each other, you get rid of that form. You would go, that's why some people are married for 50 years, and they say, well, how did you stay married for 50 years? We stay in separate parts of the house. Or, we stay in two different places. Or I got my own apartment and we got our own house. I mean, I've had a chance over the years to meet all kinds of people. And the people who had the most peaceful, loving, lasting relationships, including myself, were always the people who were willing to put the form second to the fact that they wanted to be peaceful. The people who always had the relationships that didn't work were always the ones who had some standard that the relationship had to live by, or else they didn't want to be with that person anymore. Those are the ones who go from, lose relationships, lose relationships, lose relationships. And if you become conscious, you're going to be attracted to people who are more like you anyway. So you will find that you won't have a lot of conflict simply because y'all share the same perspective of life. You won't be a monogamous person just trying to be with a person that's into polyamory. You won't be a person that loves the truth and wants to study the truth with someone who has no interest or acceptance of your doing it. They're not necessarily being into what you're doing, but they got to have the attitude of, you got the right to do it, and I support you doing what it is that gives you peace. Relationships are not difficult. It's just that the average person is just too selfish and fearful to do what's necessary to have one that works. They don't have to be difficult. Plus, the ego uses them to kick your butt. If your ego says you're not worthwhile, you're not valid, you don't deserve to be happy, so it picks a relationship that you just go through hell with. And sometimes when you end a relationship that's been painful, you're shocked at how much time it consumed. You'd be amazed that you had all this free time. Because you go, my God, I spend most of the time working on this relationship, processing, discussing what we was upset about, trying to change, you know, like all of a sudden you're like, my God, and all of a sudden you go, wow, I can go to the movie. You know, you know, I hear people, I'm working on my relationship, I'm working on my relationship, I'm working on my relationship. Like, damn, but you want to have a relationship you have to work on all the time. You know, why? Shouldn't it be a joy? Joy?
That's an interesting concept.
Happy? That's an interesting concept. So based on what we just heard, he's saying, well, what's happening with your relationship? You're looking at it. You're giving it a meaning. The meaning of the relationship doesn't exist in the world. The reality of your relationship is what your mind prefers. You say what you want, and then you send your body's eyes to find it. If you're using your body's eyes, all you folks are known is the differences between you. If you're using your mind in the relationship, you're focusing on what's the same between you. You realize that you're evaluating what you're seeing the other person doing, so you're responsible for what you're seeing in the relationship, and you're the one just deciding whether it's desirable or undesirable, pleasurable or painful, and then you realize that the way you're feeling is being created by your mind, and you've now discovered the key to happiness. I'm going to stop right here. Yeah. Yeah. All right. All right. All right. Yeah. All right. All right. So, some people think that because they're on the spiritual path, they're supposed to feel happy all the time. That's not true. Okay? So, because if you set that up for yourself, all you do is beat yourself up every time you don't feel peaceful. You just take out a slave. If it's really working, what you're going to feel a lot of the time is disorientation and confusion. Because that means you really started to shake this up. And you really started to listen to this. It's a good sign if you feel confused. What you should put like an affirmation on your refrigerator that goes something like, confusion is a very high state. Okay, and it'll make the whole path easier for you. Confusion is a very high state. It means I've opened my mind. It means I'm open to another way of looking at it. And if you find yourself analyzing what you've heard, realize that's another trick. Go tell yourself, you know what? I'm not going to analyze this right now. I'm just going to be with it, and then just go do something else. But what about this now? But how does that compare to? And what about if you say it to them? 2 weeks ago you said, if you find your mind doing that, go, that's my old learning. I'm trying to fit this into my old learning. The Course calls it, he talks about that specifically. He says, all that means is that you're afraid to apply what you just learned and you're trying to come up with a reason not to do it.
Right now.
Right. Yeah, what you're doing is you're trying to come up with a reason not to do it right now by confusing yourself and then using that confusion to not do it. So it's really a reflection of your fear of change. And it's like, man, I love this book. I mean, you know, the Christ consciousness or the love consciousness, whatever you want to call it, it's like it pegs us up and down, through and through. In and out. It knows every trick that we're going to come up with. Cause this GPS, you know, I call, you know, this is the HS. You know what I'm saying? The GPS, and then there's the HS. And we're going for the higher self, the Holy Spirit self. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, we're working with a section that's called the Responsibility for Sight. And it's one of the most powerful sections in the Course in Miracles book. And then on Sunday, I started, and we're also working on the Holy Spirit. Like, what is the Holy Spirit? The GPS. How do you get to it? How do you listen to it? How do you strengthen it? How do you recognize it? That's Thursday's class. And then on the Sunday's class, we're doing a chapter that's called The Journey Back. And it's all about how do you get back to that state that we came from. And then how to how to recognize the ego in the process, you know. So we're hitting some really powerful sections right now. So if you get a chance to read any of it ahead of time, chapter 5 Thursday night, chapter 9 on Sunday. And then we're going to continue to do this section.
And tell me again the dates of the Saturday coming up.
July 21st.
The
21st. It's the third Saturday of the month. Third Saturday of the month. 10 to 3. Okay?
Cool.
All right.
Are you going to be here next Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.